Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Today we'll be previewing the USU Student Short Film Festival of 2026. This film festival invites emerging filmmakers from every discipline to showcase their vision, craft, and originality on the big screen. It's open to undergraduate and graduate students from all fields of study, from sciences and humanities to the arts, engineering, education, and beyond. No prior filmmaking experience is required. We're going to be talking with USU faculty members Carrie Holt and David Wall, as well as USU students Kirsten Vandeverde, Henry Halleck, and Griffin Gallagher. So we welcome in David Wall. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thanks very much for having us.
Appreciate that. I'm just going around the studio here. So Griffin Gallagher.
Hey, how's it going?
Good to have you in. Pull your microphone just a little closer to yourself. Yeah. And Kirsten Vandeverde, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Henry Halleck, thanks.
Happy to be here.
And Carrie Holt.
Always great to be here.
Appreciate it. Let's start with David Wall. We'll go around to have you introduce yourselves. So, you're at which position at the university? And
I am a professor of film and visual studies in the Department of Art and Design in what is now the Kane School of the Arts.
Okay, yeah. How did you get into that? Tell me a little bit more about your background.
I've been in Utah now for 15 years. I was at IU in Bloomington for 3 years before that. I came in 2011 to art and design. And my field is really film and visual studies. At that time, film provision was pretty minimal on campus. That was it. There were pockets of it. But what I've tried to do over the years is implement and expand as much film provision as we can on campus, finding out all the time more and more people are involved in film. We set up the film studies minor 2 or 3 years ago, and it's just been an ongoing process of trying to draw together as much of the as many film constituents as we can across campus. It's been going very well, very successfully, and the film festival is really just the next step in doing that.
I want to expand on this a little later, but immediately I have questions about changing technologies, and is it more accessible now for someone to make a film?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, as everybody says, as we always say, everyone's got a film studio in their pocket. Mm-hmm. It's so much more straightforward than it used to be. It doesn't mean it's any easier to make a good film, but it's certainly easier to make a film.
You can make a film.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So I'm sure I have a very wrong conception of this. I could see students saying, okay, film studies, I'm just going to be watching films and making films. Is that what it is?
That doesn't sound like a bad description of it.
Okay.
In some ways.
It sounds fun.
But of course, of course it's fun, yeah. Film studies as part of the film studies minor or film studies that's available on campus is less to do with production. So when we think about film studies, we're thinking about film history, film analysis, film critique, film theory. It's a process of getting people to understand the way films work, how films do what they do. Again, something I always say to all my students, everybody knows everything about how to understand a film already. Mm. Most of us are just not switched on to that. So it's providing the language to think about and describe things that we know. We've all watched a million movies.
Yeah.
You begin to understand how films work from a very early age. So film studies is really about drawing out that, but it develops skills of analysis and skills of critique and skills of technical proficiency, just film studies itself. They're all really good transferable skills that you can take across all sorts of other disciplines and activities. Film production is much less available on campus. I have taught in the past or run in the past a film production course in 2016 for 10 students. I did that with a local filmmaker. It was really great. We'd love to have more film production on campus. That takes a lot of effort, a lot of resources. It may happen one day. We can't provide that right now.
Mm.
So to see that notwithstanding, to see so many students that are really already involved in filmmaking is a very pleasing and encouraging. Not only because it's great to see lots of people wanting to make movies, wanting to make films, but also because I think it indicates that, you know, as we move towards perhaps trying to develop a film production program of some kind, there is a massive number of students that would be want to be involved in that.
Mm-hmm. Let me turn to our other faculty member, Carrie Holt. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am faculty in the English department, and we used to have an interdisciplinary American Studies program, which is how I met David. And we've just been working. We have faculty that work on film are sort of scattered across multiple departments. We've got people teaching film courses in history, in languages, in art and design, and in the English department. We've really been trying to build film studies in the English department as well. So this year, David got us all together and said, you know, let's try to bring all these faculty together and let's see if we can offer more programming for students. So last semester, we hosted a couple of film screenings. There's also a student film club on campus where they're really active. So we've just been trying to bring the people interested in film. Henry will talk too. There's a student filmmakers club. Just to bring these different groups together so we have more of a hub on campus for students that are interested in film. And we're hoping to sort of just create a center so that there is just more support and so students don't feel like they're being so isolated. And we've had great response. We were really pleased with the number of submissions that we got. We got 16 submissions for the this, and we're hoping to make this an annual film festival so that we can have this be sort of an ongoing bit. And we've had great support. We got funding for the festival from College of Arts and Sciences, from their Tanner funds, and the English Department in Art and Design. So there's a lot of support for this. So I'm really hoping, and it's great that we're able to have some students here with us today so they can talk about their work. But and I'll just say, as someone who spends a lot of time worrying about AI, I teach in the English department and, you know, students, It was so thrilling to just see these projects where students are doing their own creative work. I don't think most of these were not part of assignments. This is just creative work they've been doing on their own. Some of them, I think, were related to assignments for classes. But it was just nice to see so much creativity coming out of USU students.
Yeah. Just a quick follow up. What's the connection between filmmaking and English? I wouldn't have thought that's a natural home. Creative endeavors, right?
A lot of it has to do with storytelling. So it's narrative, and it's another way of, you know, in English we do lots of close reading, close analysis. We do a lot of attention to form, character development, all of these things that are really central to film. And so that's why you see a lot of people, film it being a subject coming out of English departments has also been a home. And those recently, our film classes out of English have been our most popular courses in recent years.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
Can I just add to that?
Yeah.
So film studies historically began in English departments in universities. In America in the 1950s, really, it becomes kind of solidified. So the natural home for film studies, even though it might seem sort of counterintuitive, is English.
Yeah.
English departments.
And I guess it all starts with a screenplay. Is that another reason? I guess it starts with the
mostly
writing, does it?
It starts with the screenplay, yeah.
Yeah.
For the most part. I mean, you know, there's a whole kind of history and tradition of avant-garde filmmaking, which might not necessarily begin in that way, but for the most part, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's bring in our students. We start with Henry Halleck. I want to after you introduce yourself, I want to talk about the USU Filmmakers Club. You're the president. But tell me about yourself first.
Yes, so I am a junior here up at USU. I'm majoring in American Studies with an emphasis in American Literature and Film. And so that's what Dr. Holt and David Wall sort of used to be over as like an interdisciplinary way to study. So I'm like looking at film and literature and sort of the intersection of those two things. And yeah, so I also run the filmmaking club up on campus. We try and meet once a week. And the way we have it set up is every week we're sort of looking at, you know, a part of film theory or a technique. And then we're making like a really short film in like the hour long period that we have.
Wow.
And then we're editing it.
Like how short?
Usually like never longer than a minute.
Okay.
So, yeah, for anyone who's made a film, you know how hard it is just to get a minute of
so you're
of
making film. That within an hour?
Yes.
Wow.
So they're not necessarily high quality, but it's more a way to practice it over and over again and provide sort of a community and environment for people interested in filmmaking so that they can work with other students outside of class on, you know, their private projects that they like want to direct.
Right. Mm-hmm. So filmmaker, do you want to be a filmmaker when you graduate?
That would be
graduate?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know exactly what my plans are after graduation, but if I could, you know, work my way into the film industry, that would be awesome.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Yeah. Let me turn to Kirsten Vandiverde. Tell me about yourself.
Yeah. So I'm a junior
I'm majoring in photography and minoring in film studies. I've always really loved filmmaking and just movies in general. So I was really lucky to be able to work on this project. Well, I don't know. I mean, it was for a specific project that I made this, but I think it was a good way to kind of push myself into making more things with like a substance, I guess. Mm-hmm. I've made like short videos before, but nothing this big.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Tell me about the intersection between photography and filmmaking. They're still both have a visual aspect, obviously.
Mm-hmm. So I personally think with photography, if you can tell a story in one image, you can continue it with film. There's a large crossover. It's just photography itself is the capturing of one time and moment. So film is photography throughout a span of time.
Yeah, yeah, so, interesting, yeah.
Also depending on, like, what genre or, like, how artsy you want to make it. But, they have a – they're linked completely, I'd say. And so I think it's just kind of natural to, like, be able to go back and forth from them. So, yeah.
I want to follow up. You said, if I remember, I'll maybe just have you say it again, but if you can capture a story in one image, then you can continue that in a film, right? I guess that's the power of photography.
Mm-hmm.
One image, it tells a story, but then maybe you want to learn more. That's film, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, there's so many ways you can do photography. One thing that I've been really interested in is installation work, and that involves a lot of different photos that create this kind of narrative. It's just a whole lot of, like, what are you saying without saying it, and just seeing what the audience is getting out of it from there.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Well, let me turn to Griffin Gallagher. You're part of the local punk band Jugs.
That's true.
Which I happen to know because you did a quarter concert here at the UPR studios.
I did.
And I was telling you before, one of the air, I think I mentioned this before on the air. So you guys were playing, and I went down the hall, closed the door to my office, and it didn't make a difference at all. The music was vibrating my bones, and I enjoyed it. It's great music. So tell me about yourself, apart from Jugs, and then maybe tell me about Jugs.
Yeah, so my name's Griffin Gallagher. I'm an environmental studies and philosophy double major at USU. I'm a sophomore here, and I love music. Music is everything to me. So I met my friends J.U. and Salem. J.U.'s the drummer and Salem's the bassist at my first year here at USU. My mom set me up on a play date with Salem, essentially, and that's how I met him. But it just worked out. We started a band, started getting some shows around town, and our whole idea from the beginning was just that, like, we've been to a lot of shows in the local scene, and we felt like there weren't a lot of, like, personal, you know, bits on stage. Like, people weren't really showing their what could be their whole personality because they were, you know, that it was kind of limiting in a way. So that was a big thing for us when we started the band, is just to be, like, super authentic and funny and just honest on stage, which was really scary because I don't really have a lot of music background, but I'm completely self-taught on guitar. But getting up on stage, we're all about just being crazy, being loud, lots of random funny bits.
So is that why punk? You guys are kind of
new
to music, so just get up and be loud?
Well, J.U.'s definitely not new to music. Okay. He's very, very good at the drums. But being loud is very authentic to me. It's like breaking down walls of being just getting up on stage and just laying it all out there. That's all, you know.
So would you say environmental philosophy?
Environmental studies and philosophy, yeah.
Yeah. Which sounds very conventional and very serious.
Very.
And then you get up on stage in a punk band.
Oh, yeah, there's a big...
You contain multitudes, I guess, is what I'm
I guess you could say that, yeah. No, environmental studies and philosophy is just... I think the world needs more people that care about climate change and are hands-on with fixing a lot of the systemic issues we have. And I think punk's all about addressing big social changes and policies. So the way to do it, in my opinion, is you can disarm people by being goofy and silly with your friends, which is a lot of what my music video was. So
very nice. Yeah. We're going to go to break here. Who wants to tell me about the film festival, the details? David, do
okay,
you
wanna... yes. So the specific details are the film festival is running on Friday, April 24th, so this coming Friday and Saturday. Our opening event is a screening of Napoleon Dynamite at 7 p.m. on Friday evening. It is all taking place at the Utah Theater in downtown Logan on Center Street. So we've got Napoleon Dynamite on Friday evening, and then on Saturday, we're kind of running from 11 until 4-ish. With a break in the middle. We've got four sessions, and each session is about an hour's worth of films. Inevitably, it's going to be a little wobbly and squirrely as we go through the day. It will probably last a little bit longer, but that's the schedule as it stands. And what we have is we had four categories of films that were submitted: narrative, feature, documentary, music video, and art house. And what we've tried to do is have a mixture of each of those, or a mixture of those in each of the sessions, so that it's not just all documentary or all narrative. The films range from, some of them are 2-3 minutes long. I think the longest is maybe 25, 26 minutes, something like that. So there's a range of films. They're all incredibly good. It was remarkable, the quality of the films. It was really difficult to pare down to the 16 that we're going to screen overall, because they were all such good. It's a real testament to, unsurprisingly, it's a testament to how good our students are here and how creative they are. So that will run, as I say, the Saturday from about 11 till about 4. It is free and open to everybody. There are no... I don't think there are any issues in terms of content. All the stuff is perfectly appropriate for all audiences. So, yeah, I would say everybody come on down, support the students, support the community. We want it to be as much a community event as a USU event. So, yeah.
All right. Wonderful. Well, we'll take a break. We'll have more following this break with the USU Student Short Film Festival following this.
This is Science by the Slice. Large birds of South America, including brightly colored toucans, face serious survival challenges. Deforestation from expanding agriculture and mining is shrinking habitats. Hunting and collisions with human-built structures also affect bird populations. USU ecologist Noel Beckman and her students are exploring whether interaction rewiring, that is, changes in interactions with new or different existing species, can counter negative effects from the loss of big birds. With their large beaks and bodies, big birds aid dispersal of the seeds from fruits they eat. Beckman says replacement species could mitigate, but not eliminate, the ecological effects of loss of big birds.
This segment of Science by the Slice is brought to you by the USU College of Arts and Sciences, offering degree programs in the sciences and mathematics. Details at artsci.usu.edu.
You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're previewing the USU Student Short Film Festival. Film Festival invites emerging filmmakers from every discipline to showcase their vision, craft, and originality on the big screen. And that's happening Friday, April 24th, this Friday, 7 p.m. is a screening of Napoleon Dynamite. Then the student films will be screened at the Utah Theater on Saturday, beginning at 11 a.m. The event is free and open to the public, so inviting everybody to come down. I want to get into talking with our students and your films, right? Each of you has a film in the film festival. Before I do that, I want to talk about why we chose Napoleon Dynamite. I can guess, but tell me.
Your guess is probably exactly right. Okay. So what we wanted to do when we first the faculty the faculty group we got together in the fall, and we were talking about all the kind of things that we could do. And one of the things we hit on was a student film festival, and we thought, okay, what we should do for the opening event is screen a film that is somehow related to Utah or the locality. One of the options was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which of course is a very important film in Hollywood history. It's a very important film in Utah film history. It's one of my favorite movies. And then, unreasonably, Robert Redford went and died. And so we had a screening of that in as a sort of tribute to Robert Redford. So then the other obvious thing just seemed to be Napoleon Dynamite. You know, it's a really well-known film. It has a lot of local connection. And it's also a film that people really, really love, with good reason. So we thought it'd be a really good way to open the festival. It's, all the things. It's engaging. It's funny. We hope it will encourage a good audience that we can then encourage as much as possible to come again on the Saturday.
Yeah, wonderful. To our students, anybody could respond, is a film like this, is that inspirational to you? It is made on a small budget?
Yes.
Filmed locally?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. That's a wonderful answer. so why?
Oh, Napoleon Dynamite is like one of the first movies I can remember in childhood. It's just like, it's just got that funny small town vibe. It was filmed in Preston, Idaho. Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So just up north from us. It just touches on home, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody else want to comment?
Yeah, I can. Mm-hmm. I can add in too. Yeah, like my grandpa was a math teacher at Preston and a gym teacher for years and years. And so he actually taught Jared Hess, who directed it. And a lot of the people in the film are like neighbors of my grandparents. And mm-hmm. so like I grew up in Lewiston, which is about, 5 minutes south of Preston. So, like, I'm familiar with all the different places. I've been to, like, the houses. My cousin grew up right next to Pedro's house in the film. So, for that reason, I really like it because it's very, like, very close to home for me, too.
Yeah.
And it's also hilarious.
Yeah, it really is, yeah. Anything you'd like to say about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a, like, cultural thing here. Mm-hmm. I mean, you talk to anyone and they're like, yeah, I've seen it. Because if you haven't seen it and you live here, you're kind of the odd one out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Vote for Pedro. Everything, right? Yeah. Yeah. I should mention UPR friend Mary Hears was a teacher of Jared Hess and appears in the film. So just a passing mention there. So let me start with you, Henry Halleck. Tell me about your film that's in the festival here.
Yeah. So my film, I should remember the exact time. I think it's around like 6 or 7 minutes. And I submit it into the art house section. It's titled 3-1 Dog Nights. So if you're familiar with the 70s band, Three Dog Nights.
That's kind of
a play on one of their songs called One, which if I'm going into the history, it's like from Aborigines in Australia. Like they sleep with dingoes in like these holes that they dug out when it was really cold. And if you only had one dog, that was like the loneliest and worst night. So the film kind of touches on themes of loneliness and existence in sort of like three different vignettes. And so that's why I chose the name 3-1 Dog Nights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm reading here, you have an influence here, Wong Kar-wai's film, right? Great filmmaker. Tell me, for those who don't know,
tell me about him. So Wong Kar-wai was a big filmmaker in sort of the 90s Hong Kong film era, which was sort of like a really important era for Hong Kong because that was right before it became part of mainland China again. So there's like a lot of interesting and really cool movies that were made during that time period. Wong Kar-wai is probably the foremost with those. But a lot of his films are really cool because they're shot guerrilla style. Like, he didn't really have a budget for them. And he actually broke a lot of laws filming them because he didn't get the right permits. And he was wearing, like, you know, policeman costumes when they weren't supposed to be wearing policeman costumes. And they sort of just, like, filmed around at Hong Kong during night. But a lot of one of the most interesting things about his films is they're really focused on, like, mood and tone more than, like, a strict narrative feature. And it almost feels more like you're watching poetry than, like, watching, like, you know, a narrative play out, which is, like, one of my, you know, favorite parts about it. It's a really interesting way to think about how visual media can tell a story, and that, like, really words are just sort of, you know, an add-on to what film and cinema can really be. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of trying to, obviously, I'm not, like, on Wong Kar-wai's level, but that was definitely the inspiration for my short film, of playing more with, like, how visual media can tell a story and, like, sort of have, like, you know, more poetic narration rather than, like, an actual narrative on top of that.
Yeah. So Kerry was talking off the air during the break about a scene with a mirror. Is that? Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so one of the fun things you can do in Premiere Pro, or just in any, like, editing software, if you get, if you keep your camera, like, on a tripod in the same place and you shoot yourself from two different angles, you can put those together and it doesn't look like it's any different. So it's actually a very simple trick to pull off. But the one that Dr. Holt's talking about, we had a fisheye lens. Shout out to Graham Lowe, who was the cinematographer, and he has a really nice camera that he let me use for filming it. But we had the fisheye lens just below the counter, and the lens is so wide that it took in the whole bathroom. And so we had one scene of me standing on one side of the mirror and then one on the other, and then we sort of splice those together in post. So it looks like I'm in the shot twice, but really it's just two shots
that's great.
Put together. So
So you're going for mood, poetry. So you're...
Yes, definitely.
A lot of the individuals, right?
Uh-huh. So, yeah, kind of like with the, it's sort of like a layered, like, vignette thing of, like, sort of more just, like, questions about, like, life and, like, themes of, like, loneliness and existence. But, yeah, definitely more a mood film, and that's why it's sort of in more the art house category, not so much a narrative.
Yeah, yeah. I want to turn back to David Wall here. I misunderstood what you were saying, and it took me to an area of inquiry. You said that Wong Kar-wai broke all the laws.
Yeah.
Where I thought you were going is broke all the rules of filmmaking, but he was actually breaking the laws of the land.
There. Oh, both. He was doing both, yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, David Wald, about rules of filmmaking, and every once in a while you get a new filmmaker that breaks some of those rules and you have advances, I guess, and new ways of doing things.
You do. It's really interesting. I mean, underlying it all, we'd have to say, is that the sort of orthodox grammar of filmmaking that we would recognize today, so the way scenes are cut, the way parallel editing works, all the rules that we have were established really by 1905, 1910, very, very early. That has not changed at all. You know, prior to that, you know, in the first few years of filmmaking, that narrative was not the way that we recognize. Films were often shot, cross-cutting is a technique that we would all recognize. It's when we're being filmed in here and then someone else is being filmed outside and we just cross-cut. We know these two things are happening at the same time because we understand the grammar of film. Well, that it took a while for those kind of techniques to be developed. They've not changed. So if we watch a film from 1910, a narrative film, we would absolutely recognize it. Within that, however, in mainstream filmmaking, you get all sorts of advances in technology, which is really important. So we get the arrival of sound in 1927. We get the arrival of color film, sort of in a broad sense, in the 40s and 50s. And you get filmmakers playing with the form, mainstream filmmakers. So somebody like, you know, the thing that springs to mind is somebody like Quentin Tarantino with Pulp Fiction. He's playing with the form of film because of the way that time works. We're used to time works in a linear fashion. Well, he disrupts that in Pulp Fiction. The place where orthodox, the rules do not apply is avant-garde filmmaking. And of course, by definition, avant-garde filmmaking is designed to sort of get rid of the rules of filmmaking. So get rid of narrative, get rid of continuity, get rid of a kind of explanation of what's going on, maybe get rid of emotional identification with character. Somebody like Wong Kar-wai, who I can highly recommend, is a makes utterly beautiful, transfixing films in the mood for love. It is an astonishing film. I would recommend everybody watch it. It's really, it's so fascinating, the way the narrative is constructed, the way time works in that film. It's so affecting. It's so beautiful. It's a stunning film. So just a shout out to Wong Kar-wai. But for the most part, most mainstream filmmaking, a filmmaker will make a movie today like a movie was made in 1910.
Wonderful, thank you. Before we go on, and I want to ask if you, kind of the technical aspects, what kind of camera did you use? What kind of equipment?
Yes, so like I mentioned, my friend Graham Lowe, he's really big into photography, so he has a nice mirrorless camera. It's like, I think it's a Nikon Z50, so really nice. And we mostly used a lot of fisheye lenses, which, if you don't know anything about lenses, it's about as wide as it can go. So like anything below like 18 millimeters on a lens, you'd start to consider it kind of approaching fisheye. And this was a pretty extreme one. And that was, again, sort of taking from Wong Kar-wai and Fallen Angels, because he has a lot of those shots and it can really distort the face and like stretch how light actually enters in the camera and sort of add to that mood. And so we did that. We did some stuff with like 30 millimeter prime lenses. And prime lenses are just lenses that don't zoom at all, so you can get a much clearer shot because there's not as much light being refracted through the different glass that's in the larger lens. And a lot of them were like tripod shots. And there's a few like longer exposure shots and time-lapse shots to sort of like play with like how light can drag over time too. Mm-hmm. So pretty simple as far as like filmmaking goes. The audio was recorded later by me just on my phone, and that was something I learned was actually very difficult to do. So I need to come here to record next time.
I was going to ask you about it, and then you have to sync it up, do you?
That's like one of the bigger things. I think sometimes we think of like filmmaking as mostly the production part, but really it's mostly pre-production and post-production. The production is usually just like where you're grabbing the footage to the best of your ability, so that your editor, and which also happened to me, doesn't have as big of a headache. But usually the editor has a pretty big headache because, you know, your shots don't look as good as you were hoping for, and, you know, things aren't working, and then you want to reshoot, but then you can't get anyone to, like, can't get people's schedules worked out. So, in that editing is, like, where a lot of the movie really comes together. Yeah. So.
Can I just add to that? Yeah, just because you just made me think, and this is, having had a little experience filmmaking myself, and I don't know if you'd agree, Henry, but one of the things that beginning filmmakers, in my experience, don't understand is the importance of sound. It is absolutely crucial. You can have a great-looking movie. If the sound doesn't work for whatever reason, it really detracts from it. So as a word of advice, I would say if you think about making a film, make sound your priority.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just curious, Henry, at a film, you know, short length, et cetera, do you have any Foley process at all? You have to go back and do sound effects, post-production?
Yeah, so a lot. That was actually one of the things that took the longest editing. So I've, like, done a few other, like, short things, but this was, like, one of the first things I was trying to do more seriously. And that was something kind of to David Wall's point of, like, the sound really is the most important. Because you can get away with, like, maybe a few bad shots, but if your sound quality is poor, that makes it really hard to watch a film. So a lot of it was just, like, adding the sound mixing. I really, like, that was an experiment and a learning process for me while shooting this to make it sound the best that I could with the tools that I had. So
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's time for another break. We'll get to Kirsten Vandiverde, your film, and the Griffin Gallagher, your film as well, following the break. So, David Wall, what can people expect? Where can they go to see these films?
So, like I say, they're all being shown down at the Utah Theater on Center Street in Logan. The first session starts at 11 a.m. It will run through till about 12:15. We then have, you know, a few minutes break between the next one. Each session is about an hour. We're gonna have a break after the second session, so there'll be 45 minutes or so for people to hopefully patronize the businesses down on Center Street and get crepes or pizzas or whatever it is they want to get down there. And then the following two sessions in the afternoon.
All right, very good. We are talking on Access Utah with participants in the USU Student Short Film Festival for 2026. We'll have more following this break.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, a conversation with the co-creators and stars of the hit off-Broadway musical, Mexodus, Nigel D. Robinson and Brian Quijada. We go deep into the history of the Underground Railroad south to Mexico, and we talk about what their musical can teach us about cross-racial and cross-border solidarity. That's next time on Latino USA.
Tune in Tuesday morning at 11 here on UPR.
On the next Putumayo World Music Hour, we'll bob and sway to the lilting sounds of some of Africa's irresistible dance and party music, soukous, mbakanga, chimurenga, and more. I'm Rosalie Howarth. Join me for African Party, the next Putumayo World Music Hour.
Join us Thursday night at 10 on Utah Public Radio.
Thank you for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're previewing the USU Student Short Film Festival for 2026. It includes filmmakers across USU from all fields of study, from sciences and humanities to the arts, engineering, education, and beyond. No prior filmmaking experience required, and those films will be shown at the Utah Theater in downtown Logan on this Saturday, beginning at 11 a.m. This Friday, 7 p.m., is a screening of Napoleon Dynamite. So that'll be fun to come to both those events. All part of the USU Student Short Film Festival. We're talking with two faculty members, Kerry Holt and David Wall, also USU students Kirsten Vandiverde, Henry Halleck, and Griffin Gallagher. We turn next to Kirsten Vandiverde. Tell us about your film.
Yeah, so it really started with a grant. My photo professor, Fazlet Suhakian, she got this grant from the Alzheimer's and Dementia Research Center, and then she asked three students to work with her for a photo project. And I was one of them, and the other two are Hazel Harris Staples and Ty Statham. So at the beginning, we really just wanted to do like a kind of multimedia photo project for an exhibition, but mainly focusing on the photography itself. I was brought in because of my interest in installation work, which is just kind of a different way to display photography, or like to make it into like more of an art object rather than just the photos themselves. But I kind of made my way around it, and I was like, we should do a video. So that was really kind of my push. But I thought it was really important because our project, it focuses on the relationship between caretakers and people living with dementia. And so we wanted to like explore it in a way that was more nuanced than, I mean, you can look on Google like projects about dementia, and they're all just like, they have this kind of same visual iconography, and it's just really like something we wanted to kind of challenge. We wanted to show how living with dementia isn't just this terrible disease. It's still a life. And we wanted to make sure that we could get the voices of the caretakers, because their lives change so much that it's so important to get their perspective. But I was thinking that a video was really important because we'd get their firsthand experience. And it wouldn't, the thing about photography that you have to keep in mind is the representation, because through it, you're inherently changing it to be through your perspective. The camera's kind of like, it kind of refracts it in a way, like metaphorically. But so I thought it was just a really good opportunity. We were really lucky to be able to talk to Dave and Geraldine Perkins. They're the main people in our video. And I thought it was really like touching to hear both of their perspectives, but then also like have this kind of slice of life sort of thing, just like seeing how they interact. And I mean, in the film as well, we're talking about our photo project because I thought it was important to kind of make it more of a introspective work rather than just kind of this is just about them. It is about how dementia is represented. That's what I really wanted to kind of get across with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you mean stereotypes or? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Stereotypes and also just kind of, I mean, it's such a common experience. You could talk to anyone and they know someone who went through it, their family members, friends. And so it's just kind of, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of like an open secret, I feel. Because everyone knows at least someone who's had it. But it's just really hard to talk about because it's kind of demonized. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to kind of talk about how it is very, very difficult, but also it's just kind of a transition point that we have to learn to live with. And so that's why we want to focus on the caretaker's perspective as well. Because, yeah, I mean, Geraldine, she was so well-spoken and we're so lucky to have gotten to speak with her. But yeah, it was a very difficult subject. We just wanted to kind of explore it more.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about this, I guess you could call it perspective. You say that those choices you make, even though you're not on the screen, you're not on in the shot, mm-hmm. those choices have consequences.
Yeah, that's one thing we learn a lot in my photography major is how are you representing people? Because there's a lot of stereotypes that can be taken from just one image. And so it's kind of a constant thing on everyone's mind, and specifically when they're representing other people. You can see this in like street photography and like, I mean, works that are like commentary. Because the photographer is at the helm, they're constructing this narrative. They have to be aware of what they're saying with the photos. So that's the same with this film, is you have to know what you want to say and what it means to then be able to produce something that other people can take from. Because, I mean, every artist, they're not really able to completely construct what other people think of their work. But as long as they take focus on, like, avoiding stereotypes or, like, actively going against these preconceived notions, it's really important.
Yeah. Oh, great. Your film is called In This Quiet Still I Am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a beautiful title, too. Let's turn to our third filmmaker, Griffin Gallagher. So music video is what you did?
Yep.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so this was a music video for my band's first single titled Jugs by The Jugs. Really creative name there. yeah, this has just been the song that has been our anthem. We played at the end of all our shows, and we wanted the video to be pretty reflective of just how we are, us having a good time, and I wanted it. Something about punk music is that it's sometimes kind of unapproachable. It comes off as really aggressive or I guess unapproachable is really the best word for it. But some of my favorite punk bands are ones like the Aquabats or ones that are just like for all ages, you know, something that anyone can get behind. And I think that was a big thing for us was like our music might sound kind of loud or crazy to a lot of people, but we really were just a bunch of kids at Utah State having fun. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. By the way, a plug for our Corner Concert Series at UPR, upr.org, and then click on Corner Concert Series, and there's you can find the Jugs. You see that concert right there. I imagine you want your video to represent the Jugs accurately, yeah. Right? So how do you do that?
Well, when we were thinking about this video, we were like, what do kids in Logan, what are the spots, you know? There's this spot just up the mouth of the canyon that's like covered in spray paint, graffiti. We broke probably a couple rules being there. but, you know, that's all on brand for us. We went to Lucky Slice Pizza, recorded some shots just like paying for pizza with a jug. We went to the Logan Bowling Alley and just recorded some. We brought in the drum kit and our guitar and the bass and just recorded right in the bowling alley, right in front of everyone bowling. It's all just about like, you know, when you're trying to develop a community through music, that takes being a part of the community first, you know, you have. So it's all about just being proud of where we're from and who we are. And yeah, and it was also quite a challenge with editing because, yeah. You know, when we're just recording a lot of just what's happening, almost like, I guess maybe a little documentary style, but it's all like, you know, a little bit intentional. It's about trying to find a balance between like letting it be natural and go with the flow, but also being intentional and like having a vision with when you're putting it together in post. So
yeah. Are you going to continue with the punk music after USU? Do you think?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe.
We'll see.
We'll see. I mean, I love it, so I don't have any reason to not want to do that right now. But
yeah.
I also am looking into, you know, creating some of my own solo projects this summer, perhaps. But that'll probably be a lot different than punk music. Yeah. I don't really have anything to say about that right now. But.
I'm thinking, I don't know if you're familiar with the Fred Armisen skit on Saturday Night Live. Of course, Fred Armisen... a punker, right? That's where he got his start. And this particular skit, they're at one of these, it's an aging punk band, middle-aged mm-hmm. punk band, and at one of their daughter's weddings.
Yeah.
And the dads get together. It turns out to be a punk band, so they destroy everything.
Yep. Yeah,
so that might be you.
I've seen what you're referring to. Yeah. That'll be me, hopefully.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Keep the rebellion alive. Yeah. Carrie Holt, anything you'd like to say?
No, I just
about this?
Would really like all of these. I'm glad that we have these three here to sort of showcase, you know, the art house, really that sort of attention to sort of the aesthetics of filmmaking documentary. We also had some other really great documentaries. We have one about sort of whale watching, which had some amazing shots. We have two about sort of ag culture here in Cache Valley, one about dairy farming, one about ranching. So we had some really, just really interesting range with those. We also had some great music videos. Yours was the only one where you guys had written your own song. Other ones were sort of music videos to other existing music, which were also beautiful. So yeah, just there's a really wide range. We also have in the narrative category, there's a mafia in Cache Valley movie. We've got another art house film that's about a man using a house for interesting and mysterious purposes. And so yeah, there's so anyone who wants to come to this festival is going to see a real range. And again, all of it is coming from students, which I think mm-hmm. is just a really fun thing to celebrate.
Yeah. Before we had David Wall give us the details here at the end, Henry Halleck, a plug for the Filmmakers Club. I guess you take anybody and everybody?
Yes, anyone who's interested. I kind of mentioned what we do before, but yeah, it's a good time, and we're looking to help grow our ranks. So I think the film festival will be a really awesome way for students, work on their own projects in the filmmaking club during the year, and then being able to present it at the end of the year. But I think I already mentioned sort of the basic structure. But yeah, we usually meet for an hour, and we have pizza occasionally when my wallet permits. Yeah. So yeah,
yeah, that's up to you, I guess. Yeah. As president, one of the perks, right?
Yes, definitely.
Pay for pizza. So just a minute left, David Wall, the particulars of the film festival.
Well, again, just a real quick plug for the film club, which gets together every Monday night in FAV 150. They watch a movie. Of course, many different types of movie. Eleanor Hall is the president of that this year. I'd really encourage people to go down because you get to see some great films down there. So yeah, this is, kind of echoing what everybody's been saying. It's really great. This film festival's come together. We hope we get a good turnout. Friday evening, 7 p.m., Napoleon Dynamite. Saturday daytime, 11 a.m. till about 4 p.m., all down at the Utah Theater on Center Street, downtown Logan. Free and open to everybody, so please come along.
And we'll have a schedule posted on the Art and Design website. That should be available later today. So just go to Art and Design or just do a search on the USU website for USU Student Film Festival, and the schedule should pop up.
All right. We've been previewing the USU Student Short Film Festival for 2026. Hopefully this becomes an annual event, right? Carrie Holt, a faculty member, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
Henry Halleck, thank you.
Thank you.
One of our student filmmakers. Kirsten Vandiverde, thank you.
Thank you so much.
And Griffin Gallagher.
Thank you.
Put another plug for Jugs, I guess. Huh?
Yes. Yeah. Go listen to it.
Go listen to Jugs. And we've also had with us David Wall. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And thanks, everybody, for listening to Access Utah.